Blog Talk Radio.
Dog nigga, faux nigga, real nigga, rich nigga, poor nigga, house nigga, feel nigga, still nigga, still nigga. I like that second one. Light nigga, dog nigga, faux nigga, real nigga, rich nigga, poor nigga, house nigga, feel nigga, still nigga, still nigga. OJ like. I'm not black, I'm OJ. Okay. House nigga, don't fuck with me. I'm a field nigga with Sean Cutlery. Go play the quarters where the butlers be. I'ma play the corners where the hustlers be. I told them, please don't die over the neighborhood that your mama rentin'. Take your drug money and buy the neighborhood. That's how you rent it. I bought every V12 engine. Wish I could take it back to the beginning. I could have bought a place in Dumbo before it was Dumbo for like $2 million. That same building today is worth $25 million. Guess how I'm feeling? Dumbo. Light nigga, dog nigga, faux nigga, real nigga, rich nigga, poor nigga, house nigga, feel nigga, still nigga. Light nigga, dark nigga, faux nigga, real nigga, rich nigga, poor nigga, house nigga, feel nigga, still nigga, still nigga. You wanna know what's more important than throwing away money at a strip club? Credit. You ever wonder why Jewish people own all the property in America? That's how they did it. Financial freedom, my only hope. Fuck living rich and dying broke. I bought some artwork for $1 million. 2 years later, that shit worth $2 million. 2 years later, that shit worth $8 million. I can't wait to get this shit to my children. Y'all think it's bougie, I'm like, it's fine, but I'm trying to give you $1 million worth of game for $9.99. I turn a 2 to a 4, 4 to a 8. I turn my life into a nice first week release date. Y'all here still taking advances, huh? Me and my niggas taking real chances, y'all on the gram holding money to your ear. There's a disconnect, we don't call that money over here, yeah. Light nigga, dog nigga, faux nigga, real nigga, rich nigga, poor nigga, house nigga, feel nigga, still nigga, still nigga. Light nigga, dog nigga, faux nigga, real nigga, rich nigga, poor nigga, house nigga, feel nigga, still nigga, still nigga.
No matter what I've done, right. You've been merciful, and your love endures,
yeah,
through all things. For that, I am eternally grateful.
Since my date of birth, bought you nothing but hurt. Play those video games, stole chains from your purse. Sat on a cold court bench till I was arraigned in your skirt. Saw the pain in your face, still you maintain the smirk. All you did was motivate, don't let them hold you back. What I do, I turned around and I sold you crack. I was a bastard for that, still I'm drowning in shame. Just remember one thing now, you're not to blame. You was newly separated, trying to escape your world. And through my thirst, I didn't help you, I just made things worse. I hated me and everybody that created crack. Had me thinking the newest kicks and the latest gags. still haven't apologized, so please play this back while I try to come to terms with such a heinous act. You know in more than one way cocaine numbs the brain. All I did was think about how the funds once came. Then I ran across this memory and it stung the brain. How can you ever destroy the beauty from which one came? That's a savage, you're the reason why me and these beats make a marriage. Why I rhyme above average and I ain't shit. Glad you got yourself together, no thanks to me. Strong and beautiful, the way things should be. You must love me. Every night, but I never would suffer. Just smile, my big brother's trying to make me tougher. As we grew, fussing and fighting continued. As I plundered through your stuff and snuff your clothes to school. Got intense, real intense as we got older. Never believed it would lead to me popping one in your shoulder. With my rings, knew you had it cause you took too long. As Mickey, Annie and the girl that bought it looked on. Puffing and puffing, gun in my hand, told you step outside. Hoping, you said no, but you hurt my pride. Made our way down the steps, maybe you thought it was just a threat. Or maybe your life was just that crazy and you was begging for death. Try to justify this in my young mind, but the adrenaline and my ego hurt combined. Drove me berserk, saw the devil in your eyes. High off more than weed, confused, I just closed my young eyes and squeezed. What a sound, opened my eyes just in time to see you stumbling to the ground. Damn. What the fuck I done now? Running around in the circle, thinking I'm ass out. Hot gun burning my waist, ran straight to jazz out like a stranger. Damn, I just shot my nigga and ran up into the night as if it was not my nigga. Left the scene, how could I go out that way? Still you asked to see me in the hospital the next day. You must love me. In my brain to protect you from this life and keep you away from the game. But you was one of the few people that I can trust. And the fact of the matter, I slang these fires for us. You put the pressure on me daily, rarely would you let it go. But for the 1001 time I had to tell you no. But it was one of those days when nobody was around and I needed an emergency trip out of town. Search my mental Rolodex for all the numbers I know. As you stared in my face, asked me could you go. We said send her, everything will go smooth. Just tell her what to do and everything will go cool. Strap your body with them things as you boarded the plane. Couldn't explain the strange feeling that I caught in the vein. I'm thinking, why would I send you when I knew it ain't right? I'm thinking, what will make you sacrifice your life? You must love me.
Listening to the Truth to Power show. I'm Beverly, and we have Tuckmost Smith, Thomas, wait a minute, let me get it right, Thomas Tugmoe Smith with us tonight. Tugmoe, how are you doing this evening?
Good evening, Bev. How you doing?
Great, great.
Yes, ma'am. How's everything with you in the Detroit?
Everything is good. They're getting ready for the NFL. They putting up big Detroit signs everywhere. They putting up tents, and they getting ready to have a dancing in the street, partying everywhere.
Oh, yeah. Y'all was pretty good last year. Y'all went in the playoffs and everything last year.
Yeah, well, they had the NFL pick come. This is the first time we ain't had it in years, or if we ever had.
Oh, okay. So they got the draft coming in.
The draft, yeah. So
they got
everything set up for a big party. I think it's for 3 days or something.
Oh,
yeah, and
cool.
I see
that's
OJ
cool.
passed away too.
And yeah, that saddened me, Bev, you know.
And
the
media
things I
was
followed.
So, yeah, they were so negative. I mean, they was after all these years, they talked so bad about him. Go ahead.
Yeah, I know, Bev. You know, what kills me is I was like a freshman in college when that happened.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I would go to my grandmother's house every day, and we would sit there and watch that whole trial. We watched the whole thing. I was totally engulfed in that whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember every black person I knew, we all thought he was innocent. Prove it in the trial. Prove it.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Then years later, seemed like all the black people done switched. And I said, damn.
Really?
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, 90% of the black people think he did it. I'm saying that over
mm-hmm.
the years. And what it is, it's a lot of pressure from white people. You can't go around white people saying he's innocent. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
That's going to cause problems. So
they trying to keep
I saw
that on one of the news channels. They had a black guy on there. And you could tell the expression on his face. He wanted to, you know, to voice his opinion, but he had to say what they were saying. But he did throw in there that him and OJ was friends even after the trial. So that kind of, I guess that was the best he could do. He, you know.
Yeah. Because if you go on that mainstream media and say, you think OJ's innocent, your job is
mm-hmm.
over. You might as well go in there and talk about the Jews. You know what I'm saying? You might as well go in there and say Israel killing innocent people. You might as well go in there and say that. You know what I'm saying? So, but from watching the case, right,
mm-hmm.
it was clear
mm-hmm.
cut. Now, mind you, L.A. has damn near the worst police in the world. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
You remember Rodney King, and this was right after that. And he had the best lawyers in the world. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
No doubt about it. And anyone else would have got screwed. But he had my man break down the DNA evidence. Remember, that was the first time you heard of anything called DNA. That didn't exist before that case. They came out with this new stuff. This is DNA. So when they brought that to the table, my man just went through how they collected it wrong. Well, you collected this wrong. But the key thing was they said they had the pictures of his blood splattered on the gate.
Mm-hmm.
Right? This is OJ's blood. We tested it. So then they went to OJ's lawyers, and he showed the picture of the same gate 2 days earlier with no blood on it. So they said, where did the blood come from that y'all tested? Because when we tested the blood, it had the protein in it that you put in the blood valve. So remember, the police took his blood for samples, right?
Oh,
the cops said,
they said
I went home,
mm-hmm.
Exactly. I went home. I forgot I had the blood with me. And when I came back, 4 ounces was missing. Blood splattered all over the bunk. So all your blood wasn't there the first day, but it's there the second day. Also, they messed up with the glove because they asked the dude, yo, this is the glove that you tested. He's the forensic scientist. He said, yeah, it had holes in the knuckle from rings. He said, yeah, so show me the holes on these gloves. I don't know what happened to them. So that was it. It was over. Like, yo, what are y'all doing here? You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Y'all planting evidence. You know what I'm saying? Y'all messed up and got the wrong gloves. You planted blood. And then when the dude Fermi, they asked him, have you ever used the word nigger in the last 10 years? And he said, no. He was like, oh, really? Let me play this tape for you.
Wow.
Fucking niggas. You know? It was like, they brought him back to the stand. They said, did you plant the glove? I plead the fifth. Did you plant the glove? Did you do anything with blood? I plead the fifth. So once the main investigator pleads the fifth, it's over.
Right.
These people want him to, you want him to go to jail when the police, come on now. And that's just how these people do, man. And then being that they lost that one, they waited until years later and put him in jail for trying to get back the stuff they stole from him.
His own stuff.
His own stuff. Right. Y'all stole it from him. He comes and gets it back from you. Oh, no, you wasn't supposed to get it back that way. You're supposed to call the police. Man, I'm OJ. I can't call the police. Man, come on.
And they ain't talking about how the wife was a dope fiend, her and the guy.
Crackhead. Straight crackhead.
Yes. They ain't mentioned that at all. And that's what I heard, that they were killed over some kind of dope debt or something that was going on.
He was paying her $17,000 a month.
Mm-hmm.
She was in like $500,000 in debt to the drug cartel.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
She started prostituting the, you know what I'm saying? And I think that's when she started messing with my man Fermi. Because he knew her.
Okay.
So that's why he knew, let's go to OJ's
sense.
House. You know what I'm saying?
Because
I think, you know, nobody know the prostitutes more than the cops. They ain't number
the
one client.
Right. That's right.
You know what I'm saying? So
that's right.
Yeah. So
And then I remember it was two guys in they saw two guys coming from the back of the house in the alley. I mean, it was just so much evidence that showed that he didn't do it, but they just was determined, and everybody wanted to believe it. That's what I can't understand. How all of them, that just showed the prejudice. All the white folks just believed it.
Bev, is that was a blow to their power dynamic. You know, the fact that they could go and grab a little kid like Emmett Till and hang him and shoot him a million times and beat him to death for winking at a white woman, that's, and get away with it. You know what I'm saying? That nigga go, he that was a dent in their psyche. You know what I'm saying? Oh, shit, a nigga can get away with this now? We ain't going for that. So, yeah, that was a very epic case, you know what I'm saying? Because if he didn't have Johnny Cochran, who kept it about race, you know what I'm saying, kept the police on trial, kept them on trial for all the stuff they was doing to black people during that time, so they wasn't getting away with it. And then he had F. Lee Bailey, who's, you know, a genius psychology type, you know, lawyer. He had Barry Sheck, who was, you know what I'm saying, DNA forensic scientist lawyer. And he had Shapiro,
who
deals with the media.
What was Kardashian
was
daddy?
Kardashian was his personal lawyer for his business. You know, his contracts, he signed. So when Kardashian, this is a murder case. Kardashian's like, I can't handle this one, OJ. He said, I need to keep you on the team, but I'm going to hire other lawyers and help me pick out who I need, you know. But because that was out of his, he's a tax lawyer, you know what I'm saying?
Okay.
Yeah, he deal with contracts and that type of stuff. So, yeah, that was the dream team, they called him. And if he didn't have that, if he had a public defender like the average black person, he would have been done, over. You know what I'm saying? But yeah, without that case, the pinnacle of that case, the most important part of it, is that was the advent of DNA. Didn't have, never heard of it before that case. We got DNA evidence. Like, what's that? You know, this is this new science we have where we can put anybody where we want them to be. And it didn't work, you know what I'm saying? Because they collected it wrong. It was the first time it ever had to be collected.
Right.
They pulled out the book. Like, wait, you were supposed to use this type of syringe to pull that out, and you're supposed to use a Q-tip here, and you use your finger. You know, it just, you contaminated the DNA, you know? So, yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Look at how all the people they framed before that, before the DNA.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And now what now is coming back to Main Street, what they were doing to us back in the day, they doing it to the ex-president of the United States and people in high power places now.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, man, they doing it to Diddy. Not saying he don't deserve it, but you know what I'm saying? I heard that they had a secret grand jury, and it's about to come down on them. They got a snitch in his organization, an ex-employee who's a female. I don't know, man. It could be Faith for all we know. Faith Evans.
Yeah, all of them.
You know.
All of
them. Yeah,
they all
participated.
Yeah, but even his bodyguards and all of them, I mean, it's a bunch of people been telling on him. So,
I don't trust the bodyguard.
Didn't his girl write a book and told
him
some
that's
things
what
on him?
Yeah, and Kamora Lee Simmons is supposedly who has that book. You know what I'm saying? And she can't put it out because he got some type of gag restraint on her. We're going to get back to her in a second.
That's not Russell Simmons' daughter, is it?
Did you see, Russell's daughter with this with that old white man?
Uh-uh.
Oh, man. She out with a 65-year-old man. She 21 years old.
Oh, Lord.
65-year-old white man. Dude look geriatric. They on the beach kissing. On his yacht.
One of them men that we saw in the video where Dr. X had showed us when they wanted to, they had the black girls at the table and they wanted their placebo or their blood or something they wanted.
Oh, no, I don't know about that, but guess who he was on a few plane trips with to Epstein Island? He went to Epstein Island with Russell Simmons quite a few times. And here his daughter, his 21-year-old daughter. He's 65 years old. And it's a tape of her and the mother arguing over it. She's like, well, you did it with daddy. You know, because remember, when she got with Russell, she was 16. He was 39,
I think. Yeah, that's what them guys were doing.
Yeah, back in those days, yeah.
Yeah,
because
Jay-Z was 30 and Beyonce was, 19 or something?
I don't know how old she was when they first started dating, but I know when they got married, she was 26. I don't know when they started dating or whatever, but when she got married to him, she was 26, I think. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so that blew my mind, Bev. I saw good old Russell Simmons' daughter with this old man. Because it goes to show you, right? Because now you done heard about all these these black hip hop billionaire moguls, right? Started with Russell.
Mm-hmm.
Russell,
mm-hmm,
the first of them, right? You got Diddy.
Right.
You know, you got Jay-Z.
Mm-hmm.
You got Dr. Dre.
Mm-hmm.
You got a few of them, but, you know, these are the dudes that made it, right? They made billions. They the billionaires, right? And here they got,
mm-hmm,
one of them. He messed up his money. He got his daughter out here with a 65-year-old sugar daddy. And the other,
mm-hmm,
one, he got his kid on the news caught up in all his sex scandals. On the news getting arrested. You understand? You made all this money. You did all this. Your kids, they never have to think about nothing in their life. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And you, this is what ends up happening because of the lifestyle y'all was living. Was foul.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's what, it's a sad thing. Anything else you had to say, Bab? Dr. Jeff, is he on the phone line? Sorry.
Dr. Jeff, raise your hand if you're there. But I don't see him. I don't think he's here yet. No. Mm-mm.
Oh, okay. Let me check. Yeah.
I see a hand raised. But when you get ready to open the lines up, I'll open it up.
Okay. Well, I had a few articles, and then I wanted to talk about the topic, but me and Dr. Jeff was supposed to, hopefully he calls in. This article is entitled, "An Artificial Womb Could Build a Bridge to Health for Premature Babies." So no longer are these fictional, you know what I'm saying, science fictional, it's happening. Toronto, a surgical team scurries around a pregnant female cow lying unconscious on the operating table. They're about to take part in an experiment that could provide a new option to help premature babies survive. Now, of course, they're going to always start things off like it's
a medical
it's for something else. Yeah, it's something else.
Mm-hmm.
But it's always going to come back to something different. So, the ultimate goal of today's transition is to transition a fetus onto an artificial womb, says Dr. Khalif Haller, motioning to clear a rectangular plastic sack with a tube running in and out of it. With the transition, we're transitioning into an artificial environment that allows the fetus to still maintain its regular physicality, says Haller. The pediatric heart surgeon at hospital for sick children. Today if it's a pig's fetus that Haller and his colleagues will be using to test their artificial womb. But they hope to someday this technology that will be used to help children survive extremely premature births, avoid serious complications such as blindness, permanent damage to lungs and brains. Right. So, you know, they always say when kids are prematurely born, they do have some health issues later on in life. So this is really about them going into this with the pig as the backdrop to just like what did Elon Musk start with the Neuralink, right? The humans now.
Mm-hmm.
He started with the pigs, then he went to the monkeys. And once they get it to work for the monkeys, they try it out on the humans, you know what I'm saying? So this is the start of it. And this is in every science fiction movie we've ever watched, the artificial womb from The Matrix, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
How the robots was being conceived in the Terminator. This is it. Bev, what did you think about the eclipse?
Oh, like I have said the other day, it was powerful. I didn't look at it. I was out and about. I was driving, as a matter of fact, but I could feel the energy. It was like a real pressure, a heavy pressure that I could feel. I felt tingling in my hands, and my eyes went blurry for a minute. So you know how you have like a electrical kind of the lights go out for a second and come back on.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of felt like that, but I felt a lot of pressure.
You know, for some reason, man, I didn't see it without those glasses on.
I
couldn't see because those glasses were so damn dark. You know what I'm saying? Mm. But yeah, it wasn't what I expected. I was expecting Apocalypto. Mm-hmm. You ever see the movie Apocalypto?
I don't think so.
The Indian is running from the colonialists, the Indian, and then they're about to kill him, and then the eclipse happens, so they stop and look up like, what the fuck is going on? And he gets away. They down in like the Mayan village. This is the ancestors down there. You know what I'm saying?
But what killed me was
all these crazy theories that just made no sense. This is gonna happen. That's gonna happen. It was just like, oh man. And then once again, we had this happen. What? I say it started Y2K. Remember Y2K?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
2000. All the computers were supposed to die, and time was supposed to restart. Mm-hmm. Never happened. And we had 2010. There was something. The world was supposed to end on March 21st, 2010. Man, they had people in the subways, about ready to die. Man, that was it. Never happened. And we had 2012. We were supposed to have a polar eclipse and the reset of the calendar, and time was supposed to start again. And then it happened. Then they came with the same recycled story for 2020. So when I heard this whole eclipse thing, I said, here we go again. You know what I'm saying? I heard some people talk about they was correlating this to CERN. And I'm like, CERN? CERN is all the way in damn Switzerland. What the hell? This eclipse ain't nowhere near no damn Switzerland. Like, what they going to do from Switzerland with CERN? CERN, when you ask people what does CERN do, they don't even really know. They only going to talk about a hadron collider. But that ain't even what they do that's important.
What is it doing?
The most important job they have is CERN is in charge of the World Wide Web. That's the most important job they have. United States controls the internet. Yeah, they look it up. Put CERN, who invented the World Wide Web. Look it up.
Wow.
Who invented the World Wide Web? They are in charge of the World Wide Web worldwide. United States is in charge of the internet. The internet and the World Wide Web are two different things. The internet is the infrastructure you need to run the World Wide Web. It's the physical shit. You know, the poles, the towers. The World Wide Web is some shit they do on a computer in CERN. You know what I'm saying? That's them over there. They control that. Europe controls that. The United States controls the infrastructure. And without their infrastructure, you can't get on the World Wide Web, including China. Okay? I don't care what country it is. If United States hits the switch, it's off. That plug is dead. You understand? So,
wait a minute.
Come on, CERN.
So when they turned CERN on before, and they were saying they was bringing these entities, these demons in from another planet. CERN ain't had nothing to do with opening up no black hole or nothing. It was all dealing with the World Wide Web.
It's all, I've told you, space don't exist. It's cyberspace. That's what they're not worried about no damn aliens from outer space. What they could conceive inside of that, what they could make you believe from the cyberspace, that's what the world meant. There's no, I guarantee you shoot a rocket straight up in the sky, it's going to hit the roof. It's going to come right back down. They call it the firmament. You know, but if you ask people, they're going to tell you the world is round and all that stuff. But see, some of these theories, like NASA shot 3 rockets into the... They do that every day. They shoot the rockets into the shadow to measure the distance of the shadow to the sun. That's how they get the measurements and stuff. It, you know, they, That's what they do. They were measuring rockets. You know, they got to measure that shadow. Mm. This was like a big deal. They did it in 2017. They don't, I mean, come on. They done nuked the moon before. We know that, you know, and they didn't do nothing but put a hole on it. You know, so we, if they wanted to do that, hey, and it's supposed to be 165,000 miles away. You know, come on. Mm. But either way, but did you see this one? In correlation to that, because when we sometimes we get into those, it gets into that metaphysical conspiracy theory-ish realm where we like to be, but then things get real. So here we go. What we know about astrology influencer accused of killing her family. On Monday, woman was found dead in a car crash near Pacific Coast Highway in L.A. An apparent murder-suicide. Police identified her as 34-year-old astrology influencer Danielle Ayoka, whose real legal name is Danielle Sharikia Johnson. Based on what the investigation have shared with the press, police believe that Ayoka stabbed her partner to death early morning and pushed her two daughters out of a moving vehicle before she crashed into a tree. In the days before leading up to the tragedy, Ayoka, who accrued thousands of social media followers on her astrological advice, posted a flood of bizarre tweets involving conspiracy theories about the apocalypse. Okay? So here this influencer who did all these, looked at all the charts, and she even figured out that, man, this eclipse means the world's going to end. So she tried to convince her boyfriend. He like, man, you crazy as fuck. And she kills him and then gets in the car driving with her two daughters, being that the world's going to end. She throws them out the moving car. One of them dies. The other survives. And then she crashes into a tree going 100 miles an hour. All because... these start believing some of this, you know, the Circadians become, they did that in Egypt. That ain't coming. Come on, man. This is America. Either way, Bev, sad incident with this young lady because the 9-year-old daughter was holding the 9-month-old baby. And
oh, my God.
She
it was
opened
a baby?
The door. Yeah, 9-month-old baby. And she opened the car door while moving and said, jump out. So she said, no, I ain't jumping out. She said, then throw the baby out. And the 9-year-old is the only one who survived. And she said, I'm not throwing the baby out. So she pushed them out the moving vehicle, going like 80 miles an hour. And then
she
crashed into
crazy.
A tree. Yeah.
She was gone.
So, yeah, sometimes, you know, those, I'll be listening like, man, I hope people don't be believing this shit sometimes, you know.
A lot of people do.
But some people really believe it. I used to work with this guy, and that's why I remember the 2010, March 21st, because it was this old guy. I worked at this law firm. It was called Chadbourne. It was this old guy that worked there. Damn, I can't think of his name. And he was an elder guy, like in his 70s, still working. And he believed that the world was ending. And he sold his house, him and his wife. I mean, like they really, you know, he left the job and everything. And always wondered what happened to him. You know, he really believed it. And I kept saying, man, I'm going to see your ass one day. Better stop playing with me, man. You know what I'm saying? a lot of things going on with this dollar, but I'm going to get into that in a second. Survey shows that teenagers are using more VR devices in the U.S. According to the survey published this week, the weekly use of virtual reality devices increased from 10% to 13%. Compared to fall of 2023, okay? So this is still a small percentage. But like I said, once this becomes mass adopted and people can live in a fantasy world instead of the real world, that's when they got you. That's when they could create your reality for you. And that's the power in them having, you know, all of this being attached to stuff. I mean, they could literally create a reality for you that you're living in. Your real reality sucks, but the reality they created for you is great. And that's what you're going to want to live in, even though it's not real. You get what I'm saying?
Right.
It's
kind of like a person be drinking and getting high, so they don't really have to deal with what's
exactly
going
like
on.
That, man. Mm-hmm. It's that they're going to be like that dope fiend when they get that good lean.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
They look like they going full, but they don't hit the floor. And they happy in that moment because they living in a dream world. You know what I'm saying? Shit, you can't tell them nothing. They scratching, smiling. You know they whatever they doing in that moment. They guess why they get high. You know what I'm saying? So so this says teens spend 29%. Of daily video consumption on Netflix versus 27% on YouTube. Phones remain the number one preferred method of customer service interaction. Text, SMS, showing best secular growth trends. Now, the importance of the VR going back to previous shows is we're in that the same team. Teens are called, if you're 13, which is 14 now, it's 2024, you're Generation Alpha. To get the X, Y, Z, they done did all those. These are going to be the last generation of people that remember life without virtual reality. See what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Beta, the next generation, which didn't get created yet. They're not going to remember life without virtual reality. It's just like someone who don't remember life, like my grandmother, who remembered life before TV. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So, you know, I didn't. You know what I'm saying? You took TV away from me. I was like, oh, my God, my life was over. You know, she could go days without watching television. It didn't matter, though.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing. You know what I'm saying? Just like Generation Z doesn't remember life without a smartphone. We do. You know what I'm saying? So I could go without having phone conversations all day. And you know what I'm saying? And I struggle with that, even though I remember life without it. So that's the importance of it, going back to previous shows. Gavin Newsom, as we know, the person that they want to replace Biden with, Gavin Newsom, the governor of California. I didn't know that he owned restaurants, Bev. Did you know that?
He owned what?
Restaurants.
Say that again. Say it again.
He owns restaurants. Restaurants.
Restaurants.
Restaurants where you go eat.
Mm-hmm. Restaurants. Okay, I didn't know that either.
Yeah, so that's how he got rich. That's what made him his hundreds of millions of dollars is he owns a bunch of fancy restaurants throughout the in the most exclusive places in the country, in Lake Tahoe and Aspen, and you know, where everybody rich. And a plate less than, you know what I'm saying, whatever.
So the pandemic, they was talking about he was in a fancy restaurant eating or something.
Yeah, his restaurant stayed open while he had everybody else's closed.
Mm.
You know, and I didn't put two and two together until I read this article. It says, Gavin Newsom forces fast food franchises to pay their workers $20 an hour, while his luxury restaurants pay their workers less.
Mm.
I said, what? So it says, Golden State Governor Lake Tahoe Cafe advertises job openings for $16 an hour. California's fast food franchises must hike their minimum wage to $20 an hour over the Gavin Newsom's Hill extraordinary beneficial or his own luxury restaurants, meanwhile are paying their workers much less. So this happened like 2 weeks ago, man. They upped the minimum wage in California for all the fast food workers to $20 an hour. And instantly, hundreds of the fast food restaurants had to close down because they can't afford to pay the people $20 an hour. They're like, are you crazy? How are we going?
Right.
They had to fire most of their workers, or they had to close down. So the smaller franchise, you know how McDonald's is everywhere, you know, Burger King is everywhere. But every region, you got franchises that's only in that region. You know what I'm saying? Like, when I went to Vegas, they had something called In-N-Out Burger. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
That was like the big deal there. I never heard of it in New York. So we was like, you know, oh, let's try that. You know, some places got Carl's Jr. and Sonic's. I ain't never seen them. You know what I'm saying? But,
yeah, we got Sonic.
Yeah, you know. I got to go
like
to Jersey
we have
to see a Sonic.
White Castle. Do y'all have White Castle?
Yeah, we got one on 125th Street.
Okay.
Yeah.
But see, I bet you would see with his restaurant, he probably got to what you call that gratuity on it. Plus, they get good tips at them high end restaurants, where the lower end restaurants they only getting they pay. They not getting tips.
Oh yeah, but these weren't even waiter jobs. These was like, you know, just people who work at the restaurant, you know, in the back, you know, they clean stuff up.
Okay, I see what you're saying. Okay.
But if you made it so McDonald's has to pay their employees $20 an hour, where the most expensive thing might be $15 meal, and you selling $130 steaks and $40 potatoes, you get what I'm saying? And you paying your people less than what so how come you didn't make it for your restaurants to pay people $20 an hour? You get what I'm saying? So, this is the guy they want to put in place. And this is how the liberals stink, man. It's just all I can say. The IMF prepares financial revolution, says goodbye to the dollar. Let me repeat that. IMF prepares financial revolution. Say goodbye to the dollar. Okay. Now, anytime you try to have a conversation about money, it becomes contentious. Anytime I do, because I look at reality, I can see that they're about to get rid of this dollar. This is the number debt. And how I know it, I look at their competition. Every industry and government is the world's largest industry. You have competition. The United States has ran this shit for so long. We've never seen competition. My generation never saw it. If you was around during World War One and Two, you saw competition. But, you know, we never saw it. The United States dominated everything. You know, and now we look at their competition. They put their hammer, they dropped their hammer on Russia. We're going to sanction you. We took their yachts and homes and everything. And they said, we don't care. We got this digital system and we're up and working and we're making more money now than ever, right? And then you look at China. They got a digital currency. They're buying oil and it's working smoothly. And the United States is still using a dollar. Right? And I'm like, wait a minute. They got to switch to be competitive. It just makes sense. I mean, if you're selling shoes and these guys started making sneakers and those guys started making sneakers and those, I'm going to start making sneakers too. Okay? Because that's where the trend is going, and that's how you stay on top. So the Treasury Department understands that there's a consistent demand for dollars overseas as it means to more easier imports and exports. The petrodollar monopoly made the United States dollar essentially the trading oil, essentially for trading oil globally for decades. This means the Central Bank of the United States has been able to create fiat currency from thin air to a higher degree than any other central bank on the planet while avoiding immediate effects of hyperinflation. Much of that cash, as well as dollars, dominate debt ends up in coffers of foreign central banks, international banks, and investment firms. Sometimes it is held as a hedge or bought or sold adjusted to exchange rates of local currencies. As much as 60% of the U.S. currency and 25% of the government's debt is owned outside of the United States, right? It may take the form of a brand new Bretton Woods-like system that removes the dollar as the global reserve currency and replaces it with a new digital basket system, something like the International Monetary Fund's special drawing rights currency. Global banks are essentially admitting their plan to complete overhaul of the dollar-based financial world and creation of a central bank digital currency focused system built on unified ledgers. Okay? So this isn't something that, you know, paperwork can help you with. This is digital. Not more than a day after the IMF announced their XC platform goals, the BIS announced their plans for a single record for all CBDCs called the BIS Universal Ledger. The BIS, as Dr. X calls them, the big bank. All other banks come out of this bank. This is the big bank. The BIS specifically notes that the project is meant to inspire the trust of central bank digital currencies while overcoming the fragmentation of current tokenization efforts. While the IMF is focused on controlling the international policy, the BIS is pursuing the technical aspects of the global CBDCs, not one. So all the countries, just like all countries went to dollars at some point, right? It was probably the U.S. was the first one with them, and everybody else followed. All the countries are going to CBDCs. It's like all the countries' dollars are held by the BIS. The country's central bank digital currencies is going to be held by the BIS. Nothing is changing. It's just going to switch it to digital. While the IMF is focused on, make it clear that while papers are cashless society is a fact, the end game, the digital transaction must be monitored by centralized entities in order to keep the money secure. So that's what they're using as their backdrop. There are three major assertions made by the BIS program. First, the digitization of money is unavoidable. Cash is going to disappear primarily because it makes moving money easier. Existing cryptocurrencies are a flawed system that cannot take the mantle of the future money. Second, our existing decentralized payment methods are unacceptable because they're risky. Only central banks are qualified and trustworthy enough to take on the exchange of money, right? So back to the Rockefeller banking system, it's just digital. Third, the use of the United Ledgers is largely designed to track and trace, even investigate all transactions. So it's taking away all your freedom. Right, but it's going to have. It's not a. It Russia's in on it, China's in on it, United States is in on it, Britain, they're all in on it. It's not something they fighting over. They just want to know who's gonna be the big guy when it all goes down. Who's position themselves? Who's gonna be the top dog? You know. there are already multiple nations testing BIS ledgers. Now, it's important to understand that whoever acts as the middleman in a global money exchange is going to have all the power over both government and their citizens. In other words, whoever controls the unified ledger also controls the world's money. Same thing as it does today, right? Because the Central Bank of the United States, the BIS tells them something, they're going to do that. They can't tell them no. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
This is the Jewish hierarchy. This is the banking system. This is the Rothschild banking system. So, Ben, you said we had callers. Did Dr. Jeff call in? I think he's 740.
Let me see. Oh, I see him.
Okay. Greetings, Dr. Jeff. What kind of doctor are you?
Miss Jeff.
Hmm? Go ahead. Can you hear?
Yeah, I don't think I can't hear him.
Okay.
Yeah,
he dropped off. What kind of doctor is he? Or you call him Dr.
Well,
Jeff?
I was introduced to Dr. Jeff. He was a specialist at generating water, I believe. A water doctor, you know what I'm saying? He could purify it and clean the water.
Okay. All right. He's got to call back in.
His phone was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You said we had a caller.
Okay. Let me see. Who is this? Kwame? Are you there? 706?
Yeah, I'm
here. You on
mute? Greetings, Beth.
Okay.
Yeah.
Better love.
He's Kwame. What's going on, brother?
You, man. Y'all shaking up there on the east side. Anyway, but what I was just doing, piggyback on.
Oh, you talking about the earthquake?
Yeah. But
I was outside. I work on the 11th floor in my current location. So I went downstairs to get a lemon from the store so I could put it in my tea. And I went to 7-Eleven and got a lemon and paid for it. And when I was walking back in the building, they were talking about it, the security and, swiping my card to get in through the turnstiles of the building, get to the elevators. And he was like, the people who do the engineering and stuff, they were acting frantic, they were checking on things, it's a rush to go check this and that. So by the time I got upstairs to the 11th floor, my coworker's like, did you feel the earthquake? And I'm like, nah, I didn't feel it on the ground level at all. But we had an earthquake in 2010. I'm almost sure it was 2010. And I was working at a company. I was working in the mill room. And we was on the 41st floor. And, I felt that one. That one shook. I was at Rockefeller Center, 30 Rockefeller Center. And the calendar on the wall went swoop, swoop. That, I said, oh, shit, I ran out that building. That's like, this building old. But, yeah, go ahead, man. I didn't feel it, man.
Yeah, but what you was talking about was OJ and, the trial and all of that. But did you notice something? What did he die at?
Where did he die?
He died in Vegas.
Okay, is that where they was at?
That's where OJ was living at, in Vegas. He died in Vegas. Mm-hmm. Lou Gossett died in California. But he died in Vegas, right there where the Super Bowl was. So you look at something. He was an NFL superstar, And here it goes that they played the Super Bowl in Las Vegas, and that's where he died at, in Vegas. They did the Super Bowl on, what, the 11th, and he died on the 10th. And they announced it on the 11th. You know, and today you look at something, they released a new movie, Civil War.
But
wait.
What Super Bowl was in Vegas?
Wasn't the Super Bowl this year in Vegas?
Yeah, but that was in January.
I know, but I'm just saying that they had the championship there, and he was a champion.
I got you.
Right, an
got
NFL
you.
Champion. Mm-hmm. He died there in where they had the Super Bowl at, on the 36th parallel, which is the slave line.
Got you.
Anyway, and then you look at today, they released the Civil War, the movie out about Texas and California in the Civil War. And 1861, on April the 12th, the first shot was fired that started the Civil War. I'm just looking at how these things are coincidentally, they synchronizing stuff that's going on. And what Bev was talking about when she was feeling the energy is because all of the planets were aligned on the other, on the backside of the sun. So when they had the eclipse, everything that was coming in because all of what they now have, I think it's like four new dwarf planets. You got Setna, Ceres, Hunana, and another one. There's four of them that they're adding, as counting in as planets. And so they're out there out there by Neptune and Pluto in the Kuiper Belt. That's where they're located, in the Kuiper Belt. And so what we got was a reboot of all of that energy coming in from that transition of the sun, the moon crossing the sun, and being able to have that energy coming from the Kuiper Belt straight in and that. So it's just looking at the synchronicities that's going on as above, so below. And that was just coincidental that those dates and him dying in Vegas, where they had the Super Bowl, that he was an NFL champion, but he's known for getting off on the murder case because if the glove don't fit, you have to acquit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's all I had. That's all I had to share, you know.
Okay, so the energy that I was feeling that was real heavy, was pressure, that was there also because of the planets that were lined up.
Right.
That's what
because
you're saying.
All of
okay.
That energy, right. It's like a reboot. And all of, mm-hmm. We have eclipses twice a year, every year. But having it directly hit Turtle Island is that part. And then they've had these earthquakes that's been happening around. They're small quakes. You know, y'all had a 4.8 mm-hmm. up there in Jersey. They've been having 4.4s. They just had one in California today.
Mm.
But it's a small one. So what we're seeing
okay.
is that these energies that's coming in from the sun and the moon, because the moon now has gone back to maximum, so you're getting these frequencies that's hitting the Earth magnetic field coming from the sun's radiation field. So you having this energy that we feeling because it's just like a microwave or these radiation waves. And the thing, too, you were talking about CERN. Sir Timothy something, the guy who he worked for CERN. But that was when you said CERN is the World Wide Web. That's where, and really he was in France because that's where he did the experiment while he was working for CERN, that he created the World Wide Web. But the CERN, It's a collider. Well, this is where they're trying to find the God particle, just like they did with what they're doing with the nanotech particles that comes from space. They did a six-story hole in South Dakota, and they're running a beam from South Dakota to Illinois. And this was kind of coincidental that they were doing that at the same time. Pharma Lab was running that. They're trying to capture these particles that's coming into the Earth that's changing the Schumann frequency, the magnetic field in the Earth. And so all of this is that
the
the only thing I was saying is CERN is they have a hadron collider. They are not CERN's been around since 1950s. The European Organization of Nuclear Research. They have a lot of stuff, but they have a hadron collider. But their main purpose is to run the World Wide Web, brother. It's no doubt about it. And
the only thing I was just sharing, the guy who created it, that's his name, Sir Timothy something. He is the one who is credited with the World Wide Web. That's where he worked at.
Yeah, he created it. He worked at CERN. This is way before they had a hadron collider.
Right, that's what he did back in the 90s. See, and then what we're looking at, if you're talking about a web connection, we got a World Wide Web that's been going on since the planet was created. But you got the first telegraph that was, a cable was dropped from Turtle Island to the UK, and that's where the Queen and the President was able to telegraph each other during the war. That was what they
Now, Brother Kwame, what do you think about delineation?
Delineation of what?
Delineation of black Americans from other black people. The way we identify ourselves.
And, you know, I still go with some of the old ancestors that they say, you define a people by land, history, and culture. And the part of it is what land that you're matrilineal, if you're going matrilineal, as they did in the indigenous people here, then you have nations. You don't have a red man. You have Iroquois, Seneca, Lakota. They go by.
I'm talking about African-American, black people here. With the influx of black people from other places around the world coming into the United States, there's a movement to delineate as black Americans so we're not put into the cluster of all these other black groups that just got here. Do you agree with that? Or what's your feelings on that? I'm not talking about Senecas. I'm talking about us right now.
You talk about we as dark melanated people. And the thing that I look at it is that they come from another land, but when they come here, they can't get a cab just like I can't get a cab in the streets of New York. They don't see that they don't know unless you open your mouth that you're an African, because they're not going to distinguish. They distinguish by what your skin color is. So delineation does not have too much to do, because it's like it used to be said, they put all of us in one bag and put one name on it. They don't see that you are South American, or you from Trinidad, or you from Haiti, or you from Africa, or you from Ghana, you from here. You still the N-word. They don't delineate. We are the ones.
So you're looking at it from the scope of how white people look at us, not how we look at
ourselves. I'm looking at the scope, like I said, land, history, and culture.
You just said they don't. Who's they? When you say they don't discriminate against, they don't care.
There are people. There are all people that do this. You take the African American from Mississippi, gonna look at the African American that's working in the prison that came over here on a visa to work in the prison from Nigeria. They see us as the same.
You said they don't look at us like I can't get a cab. They still gonna look at us as the same. Look at us. So who is they?
White people. No.
What?
Okay.
So you're looking at this from the lens of white people. That's what I'm saying.
It's a system.
No, I get all of the system of white supremacy and all that, but I'm asking you, with people that are not, we don't have the same culture or the same the same lineage, you know, history, and they tend to come here and not have the same outlook on things that we have because they don't come from here. So there's a push to delineate from those groups of people who are not on the same from the same lineage as us, don't have the same culture, history. That's what I'm talking about. I don't know.
Nah,
like,
see, the part for me is, how you gonna tell me I'm an African American? What part of Africa can you tell me I came from? You can't. You might do a little test and say, oh, you got 20% Nigerian and 35% Ghanaian, but that don't tell me my lineage. Totally.
No, your lineage would come from here, right? Like you had your mother and father, your grandfather. But the people that are coming here, they don't have that same lineage, right? They don't have that same history. They're different. So I'm saying,
no.
What do you think about the movement to delineate? You answering other questions.
Okay, and to say that they're entitled to what we're entitled to, no, they're not. Because we had to suffer in order for them. We opened the door for them.
This was our home first. Everybody came into our house.
We opened the door. Right. We opened the door. That's what I'm saying. Indigenous people here, the red man, the black man that was here, we opened the door because when the invaders came in, we accepted them and allowed them to come in and do what they've done. Then all of us didn't come in. We came in on a space bus or air bus or airship. They didn't come over like our ancestors did. And the ones that was already here, that we had been here. So what you're looking at is that their coming now is because we have opened the way for them to come and get $20 an hour working at McDonald's.
And that's how come I don't see how they going to get reparations. Because how are they going to tell us from the foreigner? Just like we got, like the lady that's in Congress, she's black. She looked like us, but she from over there. From what where is that lady from?
And you talking about African? What's his? 50, Elon Musk.
65% of the National Black Congress have a lineage outside of the United States. They come from the Caribbean or Africa.
Yeah.
But they don't have the history we have with white people. So they don't look at them the same way we look at them. That causes a lot of confusion because they look like us and they're talking for us, but they not from our
lineage.
But they
not us.
And then,
why I said, what do you think about the movement to delineate from the other black groups, us specifically, instead of calling ourselves African-American, what the white people make us call ourselves, come up with a whole other name for ourselves that they can't fit into because they won't fall into it. And we are the only people that fall into that category because we're the only people with this lineage.
I did it this way. We have you got Samoans, you got the Pacific Islanders. We say they are Pacific Islanders, correct? That they come from a certain area in the Pacific and the islands. We consider ourselves Turtle Islanders.
Okay.
That means that all the lineage that was here when they came here, we have that right. That would give us the right in saying that we are Turtle Islanders. Just like they say, they have it on there, Pacific Islanders. So now you put down Turtle Islanders, that distinguish the heritage that was here from the people that came here, those Africans that come, because Elon Musk is a African.
African.
You have
he's
all
an African-American.
Right. So that's where the language messes it up. But if I say I am a Turtle Islander, that means that I was here when y'all got here.
Just like I would tell somebody I'm a Michiganan to recognize the state I'm in.
But I tell
I was born, but I'm a Turtle Island.
Right, but what people ask me, they say, well, what are you? I say, I'm a cosmic citizen. Now,
oh, you
right. I take the cosmic citizen because that's what this planet is in, the cosmos. So I'm a citizen of the cosmos. That's where I came from.
All right.
And see, that's the language that they're now doing with that. And that's a good point that you're making, Thomas, because how do we identify who I, because what Malcolm say, dogs and slaves are named by their masters, real men name themselves.
Exactly, because as far as I've known, the what happened was the people who were here, the whites who were here at the time, they had a meeting at Philadelphia, and they declared their independence, and they named themselves Americans, so Britain they could kiss their ass, and that's how the whole thing started. I mean, so, well, eventually we're going to have to do the same thing. We're going to have to identify other than what they identify as.
That's how we have to choose to say who we are as a people. You know, they have their look, the way they look at us and the way we identify ourselves is two different things.
Well, I heard that the people that came, that Christopher Columbus wasn't even a man, that it was a military term, and that the people that came over here were, looked like us, like the foreigners that's coming over here now looking like us. That's how come we took them in. Because they looked like us, so they thought we thought they was us, but they wasn't us. And then they used the white man. He the front man, but it's the hidden hand looks like us. Now that's what I've heard.
True, right? But Columbus never stepped foot on this Turtle Island. He was in Hispaniola down there in the West Indies. He did not come here.
Yeah, I heard that was a military time. Yeah,
that was the Italians bought them a holiday. The mafia bought them a holiday.
We've been lying.
Operation. You know how they have Operation Desert Storm or whatever. It could have been Operation Columbus. You know,
because
it is weird that you go all the way down to South America. They got that's the country named Colombia. They named after him, you know what I'm saying? So it's like wherever they went, the Spanish, the Italians, the French, that Columbus thing goes with them. Portuguese, exactly. Down there. Did Jeff call back in, Beth?
Yes. Let me let Jeff in. Okay, hold on.
All right, man. Better love.
Okay.
Go ahead, bro. Kwame, stay on.
Stay on the line. We at the table. Okay, Jeff, you're on.
Peace, family. Can I be heard?
Yes, you can.
Yes, sir. You sound crystal clear now, brother.
Greetings. How's everybody doing?
Yeah, great.
Good,
great.
Man. How are you?
Oh, man, I'm better. Can't complain. Your question earlier, Sister Beth, you would have to ask those people that refer to me as Doc. I don't consider myself a doctor. I've tried to get away from the title, but I can't seem to escape it. So
okay, well, embrace it.
Exactly. That's what I was getting ready to say. So I embrace it to those who bestow that title upon me. So much appreciated to all the family out there. I do my best to give to those who are in need. So, you know, sometimes I offer some spiritual guidance and sometimes I ask for a lot too.
Okay. All right. Give and take.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Yeah. Absolutely. So yeah,
what's going on in your neck of the woods?
Man, it's cold. It's rainy.
same here.
I'm just getting settled back down. I had to go to the ER last night, and they gave me one of the muscle relaxer injections. And so, you know, I was loopy loop all day.
Yeah, that's one of the best loopy loops, man. I had popped my knee, and I didn't have insurance, and I went to the hospital as a cavity case.
Texas in 2005. And being that I was a charity case, they couldn't kick me out. But being that I was a charity case, I wasn't a priority. So they kept me in the hospital for 14 damn days, bro, before they did my knee surgery and let me go the day after, right? But I planned my whole day around my shots, man. Let me go get this and that because I'm going to be knocked out for the next couple hours. And, yeah.
No. I tried to avoid it, man, but they stat went in on me, so it's all good.
Oh man.
Some people have to be careful with those muscle relaxers because isn't your heart a muscle?
Exactly.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep,
exactly.
That does relax.
We already got an autoimmune issue that we're trying to chase down, and so, you know, I'm just, hey man, as long as I'm not allergic to none of that stuff, or can we get tested first before y'all give it to me? Something. So that's where we are with it. It's all good. Thank God I didn't have a reaction. So.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. So we're going to get into this corporate collective or cooperative. I wanted to premise it frame it in a way how it correlates with what they call universal basic income. And I sent you a video, Bev. I don't know if you got it.
I did. Oh, wait a minute. I got it. While you're talking, I can put it on blog.
Yeah, because that kind of explains universal basic income. And the collective is going to be so important for us to maintain because it's a system to keep us all poor is what they're trying to implement, you know. Pretty much everybody, you know, who is going to be dependent on this, you know what I'm saying? So it's very important that we have an alternative means of income so we're above the fray because it won't be jobs, as we've already discussed in previous shows. I did the shows on like 30, 40 jobs that's going to be taken away just due to the ChatGPT. And they're going, you know what I'm saying? You have anything to say, Dr. Jeff?
No, not yet. I'm looking up the video you just mentioned.
Oh, no, I sent it to Bev. Hopefully she'll play
it.
I'm
downloading it now. I'm putting it on blog talk now as you're talking.
Okay. And this video was from like 2017. And I want you to listen to the video, family, and then think of all the things that's happened since 2017 to right now and how much of this stuff could have been pre-planned to implement this universal basic income because a lot of things had to happen for this to become viable. And also, there's a bunch of it. If you look up on YouTube, Generation Z hates work, or Generation Z doesn't want to work anymore. And you're going to pull up a plethora of videos, I mean, thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of videos of these young 20-something-year-old kids working, got a job. But, man, I have no life. I have to work here. I have to travel to work. It takes me an hour and a half to get there. And then I do my 8 hours, and it takes me an hour and a half to get home, and I'm so tired. And why does this have to happen? And then I do all this, and I can't even afford to do what I really wanted. Life, you know what I'm saying? But this generation don't want to work. They are, like, protesting it. They feel like this is absurd. This is stupid. This is dumb. You know, the whole notion of work is ancient, and the government has to do something about that. You know, what are we going to do about that? And this is why this whole universal basic income thing is so important, because this is their combat to that. You know, okay, y'all don't want to work, fine. We'll give you a universal basic income, you know, and put you in a virtual world, and you know, you But I'm like, ah, you know.
Yeah, they making sure you have plenty of food to eat, giving you the food stamp, just like they doing the people, the foreigners coming over.
Mm-hmm. That's all part of it. Like, this is all experimental. They're experimenting on them now. They experimented on us. So just think of all the things that happened since 2017 when you listen to this video where they're talking about they don't have no idea about what's happening. You know what I'm saying? But think of how all this stuff got pushed through.
Man, they're putting titles on everything. Universal Basic Income. United States.
Yeah, UBI.
United States has tried several of them. One most notable being in Alaska. The Alaska's Permanent Fund provides an annual dividend to the Alaskan residents from oil and gas revenues, typically between $1,000 and $2,000 a month. Canada's got one. They tried two tests, one in the 70s and one in 2017. Brazil has one where they offer the poorest 25% of the population. They tried this in the town of San Antonio de Pinhal. Let's see who else is on this list. Finland, Namibia, India, still a few countries out there. But it just seems like, you know, for us, well, I don't know who us is, really. United States, America, United States of America, which one is it? But the recolonization is with that digital thing. So I guess we can call that the digital colonization of the Americas now. And then the role
of the world.
Universal basic income, just like all other programs.
Okay.
To me, all the programs that they bring in, first they come up with a justifiable reason. You know, let's bring in the experts.
Mm-hmm.
They come up with a community need. And so it's really a community that needed something 50 years ago, but, you know, better late than never, right?
Mm-hmm.
After they done robbed the cookie jar, you know, they got to try to put some of them chips back in. It seems like to me that all this is a rebranding, because we have such a large group
that don't
want to get with that program called, you know, Me the U.S. Citizen. Okay, man, it is what it is. You got the right to exercise your indigenous rights, even if you are an American, then that's your right to exercise. Just do your homework. Make sure you got the, you know, family genealogy lined up. However, I like the idea that you all were talking about earlier. Let's just, you know, figure out a new language and, you know, discuss more of this collective stuff and see if we can't bounce some good tennis balls off the wall.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Who say we got to do what they say? This is creation time, so we got to create.
Right.
Okay,
and letting all those people. Yeah.
All right, play the video, and then it's a 10-minute video, and I'm sure you're going to have a lot to say after you hear it, brother. And this is universal basic income.
Okay, and then we got some more people want to come to the table. I'll put this on first.
Okay, no, go ahead.
What if the state covered your cost of living? Would you still go to work? Go back to school? Not work at all? What would you do? This concept is called a universal basic income, or UBI, and it's nothing less than the most ambitious social policy of our times. In 2017, basic income is gaining momentum around the world. First trials are ongoing or on their way, and a growing number of countries are considering UBI as an alternative to welfare. How would it work, and what are the key arguments for and against? Right now, people can't really agree what universal basic income is or should be. Some want to use it to eliminate welfare and cut bureaucracy. Others want it as a free extra for existing programs, or even want it to be so high that work itself becomes optional. For this video, we'll talk mostly about the minimum basic income, enough money to be above the poverty line. In the US, this means about $1,000 a month or $12,000 a year. The money would not be taxed, and you could do whatever you wanted with it. In this scenario, UBI is a way of transferring the wealth of a society while still keeping the free market intact. But if we hand out free money, will people just spend it on booze and stop working? A 2013 study by the World Bank specifically examined if poor people waste their handouts on tobacco and alcohol if they receive it in the form of cash. The clear answer, no they don't. The opposite is true. Other studies have shown that the richer you are, the more drugs and alcohol you consume. The lazy and drunk poor person is a stereotype rather than reality. What about laziness? Universal basic income test runs done in Canada in the 1970s showed that around 1% of the recipients stopped working, mostly to take care of their kids. On average, people reduced their working hours by less than 10%. The extra time was used to achieve goals like going back to school or looking for better jobs. But if laziness and drugs are not a huge deal, why doesn't our current welfare state solve poverty? Welfare or unemployment programs often come with a lot of strings attached, like taking part in courses, applying to a certain number of jobs a month, or accepting any kind of job offer, no matter if it's a good fit or what it pays. Besides the loss of personal freedom, these conditions are often a huge waste of time and only serve to make the unemployment statistics seem less bad. Often your time would be much better spent looking for the right job, continuing education, or starting a business. Another unwanted side effect of many welfare programs is that they trap people in poverty and promote passive behavior. Imagine a benefit of $1,000 each month. In a lot of programs, if you earn a single dollar extra, the whole thing is taken away. If you take a job that's paying $1,200, you might not only lose your benefits, but because of your taxes and other costs like transportation, you might end up having less money than before. So if you actively try to better your situation and your total income is not improving or even shrinking, welfare can create a ceiling that traps people in poverty and rewards passive behavior. A basic income can never be cut, and therefore getting a job and additional income will always make your financial situation better. Work is always rewarded. Instead of a ceiling, it creates a floor from which people can lift themselves up. But even if UBI is the better model, is it economically feasible? What about inflation? Won't prices just rise, making everything just like it was before? Since the money is not being created by magic or printers, it needs to be transferred from somewhere. It's more of a shift of funds than the creation of new ones. Hence, no inflation. Okay, but how do we pay for it? There's no right answer here because the world is too diverse. How well off a country is, what the local values are. Are things like high taxes or cutting the defense budget politically acceptable or not? How much welfare state is already in place, and is it effective? Each country has its own individual path to a UBI. The easiest way to pay for a UBI is to end all welfare and use the free funds to finance it. Not only would this make a number of government agencies disappear, which in itself saves money, it would also eliminate a lot of bureaucracy. On the other hand, cutting them could leave many people worse off than before. If the goal is to have a foundation for everybody, there still need to be programs of some sort, because just like countries, people are not the same. The second way, higher taxes, especially for the very wealthy. In the US, for example, there's been a lot of economic growth, but most of the benefits from it have gone to the richest few percent. The wealth gap is rapidly widening, and many argue that it might be time to distribute the spoils more evenly to preserve the social peace. There could be taxes on financial transactions, capital, land value, carbon, or even robots. But UBI is not necessarily expensive. According to a recent study, a UBI of $1,000 per month in the US could actually grow the GDP by 12% over 8 years because it would enable poor people to spend more and increase overall demand. What about the people who do the dirty work? who will work in the fields, crawl through sewers, or lift pianos? If you don't need to for survival, will people still do hard, boring, and unfulfilling labor? UBI might give them enough leverage to demand better pay and working conditions. A study calculated that every extra dollar going to wage earners would add about $1.21 to the national economy, while every extra dollar going to high-income Americans would add only 39 cents. There would still be very rich and poor people, but we could eliminate fear, suffering, and existential panic for a significant part of the population. Making poor citizens better off could be a smart economic tactic. For some, this isn't enough. They want a UBI large enough to live a middle-class existence. If we set the financial obstacle aside, this idea fundamentally challenges how our society is constructed. By earning money, you earn the possibility to take part in society. This determines your status and options, but it also forces many people into spending huge chunks of their time on things they don't care about. In 2016, only 33% of U.S. employees were engaged at work, 16% were actively miserable, and the remaining 51% were only physically present. Would 67% of people stop working if they could? It would be unfair to portray work as just a chore. Work gives us something to do. It challenges us. It motivates us to improve. It forces us to engage. Many find friends or partners at work. We work for social status, wealth, and our place in the world. We're looking for something to do with our lives. And for many people, work gives them meaning. There are other concerns with UBI. If all welfare programs were exchanged for one single payment, this gives the government a lot of leverage. Individual programs are easier to attack or cut than a multitude. Or populists might promise drastic changes to the UBI to get into power. And a universal basic income doesn't tackle all problems when it comes to inequality. Rents, for example. While $1,000 might be great in the countryside, it's not a lot for expensive metropolitan areas, which could lead to poor people moving outwards and the difference between rich and poor becoming even more extreme. And of course, for some people, the concept of work itself not being essential for survival is appalling. So is the universal basic income a good idea? The honest answer is that we don't know yet. There needs to be a lot more research, more and bigger test runs. We need to think about what kind of UBI we want and what we're prepared to give up to pay for it. The potential is huge. It might be the most promising model to sustainably eliminate poverty. It might seriously reduce the amount of desperation in the world and make us all much less stressed out. This video was made possible by a universal basic income provided by you, our viewers. 10,000 people around the world gift us a monthly income on patreon.com/kurzgesagt. You enable us to pay salaries and buy new hardware. You enable us to make more videos and you enable us to spend more time on them.
All right.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Uh-huh.
Yes, yep. Okay. So I thought that was pretty cool because he was talking about universal basic income, which we did a show on before a long time ago, Bev. Mm-hmm. And work from home. Well, didn't COVID cause that?
Yep.
You know, right? Work, school from home. COVID caused that too. You know, free money given out. With COVID, they was giving people money, right? That was the rollout. That was the test. Most of this stuff was tested during that period. Mm-hmm. So they rolled it out here during the COVID. They had a whole year or so. They gave people all this money. They on your card. They got to track what you did, see where you spent. People took vacations with it and did this. How many people put their money together and started a business? Not too many. You know, people here in Harlem, man, I never seen so many BMWs in my life.
Yeah.
As soon as the check stopped.
Yeah.
As soon as the check stopped, man, BMW. Yep.
in the BAW in sight no more. You know what I'm saying? But they rolled it out. Now, the reason why the corporate collectives, and I'm going to get right to you, Dr. Jeff, is important, because the beauty in the UBI system, let's take away the negatives, is that everyone gets it. Don't matter if you work or don't work. Don't matter if you're a millionaire or you're homeless. It gets you get $1,000 every month, and I think it'll be much more than that, right? So with a job or with another form of income coming in, you're doing better than everybody else, because everybody, you know, you especially our people, they not gonna aspire to do nothing more than that for the most part. You know what I'm saying? They're gonna take that little $1,000 a month and budget it and make it work and get a little side hustle outside or something, you know. But the people that's gonna do well in the future will be the people who have another form of income other than the universal basic income. And those people will have the heads up on everyone else. And that could be us with a corporate collective that brings in a steady income to the people that's in it. And of course, you know, it has to be businesses that run off of it, as well as the other things we want to do. But whoever has an income coming in, because the jobs are going to be gone. They just had a show, Bev, and Dr. Jeff, with the newest robots. And it was like, you know how they have the car show every year. Of course, you know, Bev,
mm-hmm.
the car
mm-hmm.
show. This was the robot show. And, man, they have robots, I mean, humanoid robots. We talk about, look like, you know,
like
shaped like a person. Like the Terminator, you know, like shaped like a person,
mm-hmm.
shaped like, you know, the Terminator without the skin. I mean, you know, it's the metal.
Oh, okay.
But, you know,
okay.
Humanoid meaning that two legs, two arms, you know what I'm saying?
Mm.
Like we, to replace us. So they're making them to work in all these different type of factories and
yes.
warehouses and things like that. And so they have to be shaped like a person, because the warehouse was built for people to do those jobs, you know? So whatever they put there has to be something like a person. So they're humanoids. And, man, they are really outdoing themselves. And I said, damn, this is coming fast, you know? And now they have they're putting ChatGPT into these robots, and these robots are having full-on conversations with people, you know? It's starting to get really scary. So whoever, the universal basic income is definitely coming, because there's not going to be jobs. We already did the shows on that. It's not going to be the jobs that we see today. Most of them will be eliminated to get money other than what the government stipends you, because that's going to come with, they say it's not, but that's going to come with compliance. You understand? You can't say this. Don't be online talking about no damn Israel and you getting some universal basic income. You know what I'm saying? Y'all got anything to add to that?
So it's like the welfare, like you said on there, you know, you couldn't go get no hustle. You couldn't go get no extra job. You had to just only live on that welfare money. But with this, they're going to give you the money. You could go get a job or do something else, but
exactly.
They're going to censor you. It's going to be the same setup, but they're just going to censor you, where before you couldn't do this, but same thing. It's the same, basically the same thing.
Yeah, they just reversed it on that. Yep.
Right. Yeah, go ahead, Kwame.
My mic's still up. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that, you know, what they're doing is part of what Agenda 21, and this is what it
mm-hmm.
Thomas was saying. This is part of Agenda 21, Agenda 25, Agenda 50, Agenda 30, and then 50. And they've
mm-hmm.
already had plans in place for these things to see how they would come out, and then they'll know how to plan for the next 10, 20 years and their strategy. the part that we're looking at, and basically they say $1,200 is poverty. Well, in 7 years, now today, poverty is $1,900. That's what's considered the poverty line. So in 7 years since that was put out there, it was, you know, this part of 7 years, and now you see, okay, this is how they're forecasting. So you're looking at trying to live in New York or a major city, you can't even, that wouldn't pay for a studio. You know, and you're talking about this single person. But I can see the advantage of it with what Thomas is talking about. If you get 10 people that want to work together as forming a coalition or a corporation, that's $10,000. If they already got a side job and they got income, that's an extra income that they can put and invest in, not saying that what they're spending it on, because they're going to have guidelines, like Thomas said, they're going to be guidelines as to what you can spend it. But if you invest in starting up a business or starting up a training program, something that's going to be able to be used, that money can be used to invest in your own future. This is what we want to start looking at. How do we invest in ourselves? If they're going to give us our tax money back, because that's all it is getting your tax money back and then investing it and making it where there's going to be more opportunities for your children and people that live in your community to be able to have something to sustain them, instead of that, you know, that check is going to be there, but you're still looking at how you're going to create these jobs.
Yeah.
That's what I see what Thomas is saying, and that, yeah, we can, if we use it smartly, don't go out here buying BMWs like they did with COVID. No, you take that check, and you, even if you only use half of it, you take 500 and do what you need to do, take the other 500 and invest in the pool with the rest of the 10 people, that's $5,000. You can start working towards something investing in. Especially if you get somebody that says, okay, we're going to pull it together, and they know the market, and say, okay, we're going to buy Bitcoin, or we're going to buy crypto, whatever. And so, and then be able to watch that market and watch that money come in every month and see how it begins to profit that nest egg. That's what I see it as being, because it's behavior social control is what they're moving into. To where you're going to be, you know, the government can say, if you talk about Palestine and you talk about anything that's against the government, then we cut your check off.
Let me let someone else to the table with us. I'm going to open this. They've been waiting. 708-837. 708.
Peace. How you all be tonight?
Brad, what's up, Brad?
Good.
All right. Good conversation.
Brad.
All right, peace. How you doing tonight, Jeff?
And, much better, brother. Appreciate it. How about you?
All right. Both of you brothers, how y'all doing tonight?
Grateful. Thank you.
Good, man.
Hey, I don't want to get off topic, but I was just sitting up here while y'all was talking about that, and I was looking at these 45 communist goals. Let me see if I can get back to what I was looking at.
Oh, this is definitely communism.
Yeah, I know. That's why I wanted you to hear this. 45 communist goals from 58 years ago. This is by Tom Lakata, and it's from, he wrote this on July 2nd, 2021. But it starts off like this. It says, on the founding fathers of our nation's 245th birthday, it would be nice to set our eyes on the window displaying blue skies, but out on another window displays storm clouds. Montepella's decision to cancel any meaningful 4th of July recognition along with other schools and our very own government promoting critical race theory. And they go through all of this because all this, I guess basically the communist regime came up with most of these ideals. I'm going to go right to the ideals. I'm not going to read through the whole thing. But it starts off like this, 45 communist ideals. And this is in the congressional records too. Capture one or both of the political parties in the United States. He controlled the schools and teachers, associated and softened the curriculum, gained control of all student newspapers, infiltrate the press, gain control of key positions in radio, TV, and pictures, and eliminate all laws governing obscenity by calling them censorship and a violation of free speech and press. Break down cultural standards of morality by promoting pornography and obscenity in the media. Present homosexuality, degeneracy, and promiscuity as normal and natural and healthy. 9, infiltrate the churches and replace revealed religion with social religion. Eliminate prayer on any phase of religion's expression in the schools on the grounds that it violates the principle of separation of church and state. Discredit the American Constitution by calling it inadequate and old-fashioned. Discredit the American founding fathers as selfish aristocrats and racists. Belittle American culture and discourage the teaching of American history. Discredit and eventually dismantle the FBI, infiltrate and gain control of big business and unions. Transfer some of the powers of arrest from the police to social agencies. Treat all behavioral problems as mental health and social problems. Discredit, this is 16, discredit the family as an institution. Encourage promiscuity on an easy divorce. Emphasize the need to. All right, I can't say I can't pronounce that. Emphasize the need to raise children away from the negative influence of parents. Repeal the Connolly Reservation, allowing the world court jurisdiction over nations and individuals alike. Ethan Allen Institutes, John McCauley, and Rob Roper recently wrote the means employed by the state of Vermont to achieve these goals. And now they're saying how they went and what they did. I don't want to read through all this. What they did, though, they went to Vermont and they set up a board behind the scenes where they don't have to vote for anything. They have people that's not elected making decisions for everybody, which is what we're seeing in America right now. We got people that we don't know making all our decisions for our country.
So we under communists then.
Yeah, we under partly we under communism. Well, that's what they kind of shooting for, communism. Because this was put in the
sound like we already under it. All that stuff is what already we doing.
And they did this in 1937. That's when this theory came up.
Mm-hmm.
Ain't that something that's been in play this
so,
long? And I went to as we know,
the communists are the Bolsheviks. And who's the Bolsheviks? That's the small hats. You know, back to them. You know what I'm saying? It's the same thing.
You talking about
thing,
the Agonazis or the Europeans? You talking about the Agonazis or the Europeans?
Yeah,
those
are the ones. The side curls. Because they that's what the Bolsheviks looked like, you know. And, man, everything you're saying that just read, that's what's happened. You know, they took over the media. They tell our teachers what to teach. And, oh man, did y'all see they fired that black lady today? They fired the black school teacher, the vice principal of the school. It was a little black kid that went to school. He was 6 years old. And him and the teacher had some problems, so he brought a gun to school, and he shot the teacher. He didn't kill her. He shot her in the chest. She almost died.
6 years old?
He was 6 years old. This was in Virginia. This was like 3 years ago.
Oh, I was going to say that was 3 years ago. Okay. I remember that.
Yeah, then it disappeared from the media. They never showed the kid. And I always say, yo, what was this kid? Was he black? Was he white? Because the teacher's white. And the school looked like a black school, you know what I'm saying? And I'm like, man, so finally they showed the mother. They arrested the mother. They couldn't arrest her for the kid taking her gun and going to school. So what they arrested her for was when they had the initial warrant, she had a joint in the ashtray. So they gave her 2 years for the joint, you know, and they took the kid away because, you know, she has a drug problem. You know what I'm saying? I'm white and I say so. So being that we can't get you on this is what they did to OJ. We'll get you on that, right? You're not going to get away with it,
well,
right? So they did that. But wait, let me finish. So today,
go ahead.
The vice principal, black lady, she gets fired and charged for this whole thing 2-3 years later. So why you pick the black lady, the vice principal? She ain't got nothing to do with this shit. She just happened to be the vice principal at the school.
Huh? Somebody else's child. It's not her child. How is she responsible?
Yo, so we going to see, man.
How did they skip over the principal? Where was the principal at?
Principal's white. Head of security's white. Everybody white, but they go to the black lady and she charge her with it. I said, look at Virginia, bro. Only, yo, I got to stay up north, what? Man, I tell you. But, man,
well,
this is crazy. I said, Were
you looking at the FICA courts, what they did today with the FICA courts? They're supposed to be investigating foreign agents in other countries. But these sneaky boys from the FBI and the CIA, they've been investigating Americans without a warrant. So they're going behind your back, going through your stuff, whether it be whatever you write on your computer, whatever you have on your Facebook pages. These boys are going behind you, and they're investigating brothers without a warrant. That's that communism Nazi stuff
that.
Too, right there.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I was trying to
the parents. Remember the kid that shot up here?
I was about
in
to say that. Mm-hmm. Yep.
They got 10,
so that's gonna
10
be the,
15 years.
Yep, for that. Now they were guilty as fuck though. They bought this crazy motherfucker a gun. You know, like come on, man. Y'all knew y'all son was crazy. Yo, but either way, this is setting a new precedent, though, because now when little Tyrone goes shoot little Tykeith, you know what I'm saying, over some dumb
they
stuff.
They might come get mommy and daddy.
They
man.
Come get his mother. Yeah, they go get mama and lock her up.
Oh,
for
man.
You know what I'm saying? And she didn't know this little fool was out here in the streets joining some damn gang behind her back or something and out here doing dumb stuff and, you know what I'm saying, get caught up, and here they come arresting her. But that white case, it reminded me, once again, I don't know if y'all remember this case in Texas. This might have been 3 years ago, maybe even longer. They called it affluenza. This kid was never told no. He had an accident.
Oh, yeah.
He killed everybody in the car. And they their defense was he was so affluent that he never was told no, and yo, they let him go. I said, yo, get out of here. You know, like his parents were terrible parents. They never told him no. They went with that whole defense and won. You know what I'm saying? And now they got the parents in jail of this affluent kid, because I don't think anybody poor could live in that area. All the houses is like $6 million. But
that's all about money.
But brother, Dr. Jeff, man, what did you think about the universal basic income and how that correlates to us starting a corporate collective? Because that's what, back to the topic. Sorry,
yeah,
to get
welfare
away.
On steroids and, you know, another way for the politicians to take funds out of the cookie jar, because ultimately they're the ones, you know, to create these organizations. The organizations are the only ones that can collect those funds today anyways and set those programs up for us to go through. So, you know, it's back to when you were talking to Elder about the blacks coming over here. Well, come to find out, you know, word of mouth, they come here, seek asylum, have that dual citizenship, they get a green card, and go through the whole naturalization process. And that, my friend, is universal income as well. It's just on steroids for them because they go along with the get-along gang.
Yeah. And a lot of those people coming over from countries, like I was looking at this thing on the news here because, you know, this is like ground zero. So they were talking to the people, and these were Africans they were talking to. And they were saying how they came over here. They said that they're being persecuted because of their gay lifestyle. Yeah, that their rules are so harsh on gay people over there. So that's, even if they're straight, they're using that as their premise to get over here because they know that the United States isn't going to turn them away if they say they're gay. You get what I'm saying?
Wow.
Very smart.
Well,
they're putting pressure on all
them African countries to embrace their gayness, and them African countries are not embracing none of that gay nonsense.
Yeah, so that's their angle.
that they came here because their country kills the gay people and they're afraid to come out, and their own parents won't accept them. So they came to this country seeking asylum. So they're allowing people, they're supposed to get asylum if your country getting bombed. You know what I'm saying? If you have your country had a coup or something like that, but like the Venezuelans, they had a coup. You know, they country went bankrupt. You know, that's asylum seeking type shit. Haiti, what's happening in Haiti? Yeah, they need asylum right now. They got barbecue. You know what I'm saying?
But with the
Africans, there ain't no wars over there that y'all fighting with them too. Y'all fighting each other, throwing rocks at each other. But, oh, y'all say y'all gay. Damn, I said that was smart, man. That was real smart on their behalf, man.
Check the box. So.
But I hope that these white people don't say, really? Well, let us see how gay you are and put them to the test. You know, why don't you come over here and bend over for me? You know?
Right. Mm-hmm. I was just playing. I'll go back home. To the point, there's a Saudi Arabian dude that has a store here, and he's a third generation because his grandpa came over here first. So one night I'm in there listening to him rant about how his grandpa came over here, you know, worked for everything he got, and, you know, the sweat off his brow and this, that, and the other. And I was like, well, did he come over through Ellis Island? And he was like, as a matter of fact, he did. I thought, man, case closed. I'm out of here. You know, he was given everything he got on a silver platter. They were given a grant money to open up this store. They were educated on how to order the goods, how to, you know, do accounts receivable, accounts payable, shit like that. Hired a bookkeeper for him and everything. And now those funds are still getting shipped back home to Saudi Arabia after three generations of it.
Yeah,
you know,
that's what they did here with the air. Same thing.
Yeah.
No, that's what they did with the
Vietnamese group
when we came off from Vietnam.
So that's what they're doing to all of them, foreigners.
Well, just remember this.
Yeah.
They could, the same thing they did to them, they could have did it for every American. They could have did it for every veteran, every homeless person in America. They just knew what they could do. Remember, they're making the money. They're pulling the money out of thin air. It's not like they're handing out gold and silver. They're printing up on a press. So they can print as much of it as they want. That's why inflation is killing them.
Every state has a homestead clause or a law. Homesteading has been in effect since the 1800s. Nobody hears about that.
The Merrillville Act. The Merrill Act.
Well, they call it the Homestead Act.
The
Homestead Act here in Ohio. And basically, when you file those forms with the proper authorities, everything is paid for.
And this is what they should be teaching in school. They hiding all of this from us.
Exactly.
Yeah, the first person I heard about the Homestead Act that is Brother Vaughn March right here on Bev's show. And rest in peace to him. But yeah, he used to always go into the Homestead Act and the Clearfield Doctrine. Those two things he would always talk about. You know, you got to keep this. You got to remember, Bev. You know, he's going at it. Right. Now, what you said is welfare on steroids, and they so clever because now instead of putting the $1,200 off their balance sheet or the $1,000 a month that they'll give someone, let's just say with three kids on welfare between the food stamps and everything, the rent assistance and everything, it totals out to $1,000. You eliminate the welfare, give them the $1,000 directly. Now they're going to spend the $1,000 back into the economy, which keeps the economy, what they said, growing at 8% every 2 years or 3 years. So I said, look at this, man. So they're going to do to people what they do to the business. Like when the stock market, when they want to prop up these companies and make the stock market look like it's going high. And Trump did this a lot. He allowed the companies to buy their own stock. So now they're buying their own stock at a rate that makes their
stock price go up, right? Because it's going up because people are buying it. Yeah, they're buying it. You know what I'm saying? So it's essentially the same thing. You're allowing people, the government, or the businesses pretty much to take, print out the money. They're going to give you the money through their, you up in their taxes, and then they're going to set it up so you give it right back to them. You know what I'm saying? And it goes off of their balance sheet as though this is going against the debt. Like, this is, I said, look at this, man. They're giving you welfare, but they just calling it something else.
And, it's corporate welfare. It's corporate welfare.
Yeah.
Because all corporations are taking money. They have no problem. Remember, all the hotels are booked up for the next couple of years. Matter of fact, they're supposed to start putting them out of New York today, if I remember it right. And another thing, all the food, they go into those little corner stores. They're spending the money to buy three hots and a cot. They got a place to live. They got three hot meals a day. So that means that little business on the corner where they buy their food from, he becomes rich. Everybody becomes rich except for us who have always been here. Matter of fact, these people in our neighborhood, these people are not in the right people's neighborhood. They're in our neighborhoods because the right people ain't having them in their neighborhoods.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And, you know, they're going to be their working class until they get their robots because they don't got to pay them. They already got jobs. Like, you got to be about the dumbest immigrant in the world to not have a job in New York by now, man. They cleaning the stores, they bellhopping, they doing all that stuff. Like, I mean, sweeping up the barbershop floors, they all got jobs, man. You how you don't have a job, you know? So, it's set up for them, bro. Now they just need to find somewhere for them to live. That's their problem right now.
All them scooters on New York Street. I ain't never seen so many scooters, man. Them boys went bought up every scooter in New York City, ain't they?
Yo, they got scooters, man. Scooters, the cops just take the scooters and throw them away. The next day, they got brand new ones, bro. They everywhere. All these Chinese scooters, man. This shit is like Chinatown in the movies when you look at China. You know, and everybody on bikes and stuff. Like, this is what this shit done became, man. If they on a scooter, they on a pedal bike. But the pedal bikes got a little engine in the pedal bike that moves the chain for them real fast.
A little electric motor.
Yeah,
on the back wheel.
They speed, they going through, man. And they getting in a lot of accidents, bro. And they ain't got no insurance, nothing. They taking on these jobs like, yo, y'all crazy. Like, we would never do this. Are you dumb?
That's why they got them here. That's why they got them. They don't want to pay you the living wage, so they got a new bunch of people now to pay that substandard wage to. But the difference with them, they got health benefits and everything. A lot of jobs that you take that don't pay a good wage, they don't have no health benefits.
I don't take a job that don't have health benefits. Like, what the hell is the point? You know what I'm saying? Like, only jobs I took without health benefits was a temporary job. Like, I'm only going to be here 3-4 months, so they're not offering benefits, but I need the job, so I'll take it. But if I'm working for the company, I need benefits, man. You know, I got health needs, you know what I'm saying? What's wrong with y'all, man? Y'all got, all companies should offer, it should be mandatory. And the sad thing is, man, my daughter started a job, and her company, they wanted like $700 a month for her health benefits. So she couldn't even get them. I was like, damn, because, you know, my job is like, what, so like $91 a month? You didn't come out my check for that? Like, I couldn't even fathom something like that. Like, damn, you know what I'm saying? Mm-mm.
But I just sent y'all. I went on the government site, and they got the fact sheet for the U.S. Action for Global Development came out in September 2023. And what we're talking about right now is what's all on this agenda for 2030 that they already have implemented. And this is what they're structuring. And they have the one that's called Resilience and Sustainable Food System and Food Security, with the world facing an ongoing protracted food crisis. Millions and additional people have been pushed into the food insecurity and chronic hunger. And this is what we're looking at. Like, this is, you talking about the little stores And this is part of what the Biden administration got into, the $15.2 billion for emergency development for assistance. And so this is why you hear in this universal, because they pushing this for the 2030 agenda. And they have a listing, and I sent it to you, Thomas, I sent it to Jeff, and I think I sent it to you, Beth. And these are the programs that are already in place.
Yeah, this is already going down. And check this out in China, the way it works in China, of course, they call it social credit, right? But the way they got it working is, let's just say they don't want obesity. They say that's one of the biggest health expenses in their country. So to combat obesity, they limit what amount of food you could buy every day using their digital currency, because everything over there is digital. Gotta use your phone to pay. So let's just say you go to McDonald's and you want two burgers. Nah, you only can get one, family. You know what I'm saying? No two. Can't get a big soda. You only can get the small one. Then your car won't work to get that for you. You know, they can track your calories. But if you don't eat all day, now you might be able to go get the Big Mac. Because you didn't buy nothing all day, so you spending all your money on that one meal. It's crazy. But this is what's going to end up happening here. And this is why they got all this bugs they want to put out as food. They got cricket flour and ant flour and all this health food now. And it's like, for what? Now they're going to force you to eat this stuff because that's going to be healthy. Even though it's like, I don't want to eat bugs. But nah, you eat that protein and this, that, and the other. So if you don't eat it, they'll know, because they'll have control over what you spend your money on. It's ridiculous.
Hey, but look, all the people that are telling you to do these things, not one of them is an elected official. How do they get to tell you anything?
How if they can control what you do and what you buy? I mean, I understand that they putting up these blocks, you know, the food, but you have a choice to do otherwise.
And what you just said, that's the danger, right, with this universal basic income, because they're keeping you right at the poverty line. And what do they say their plan is? For you to own nothing and be happy. So they're going to give you everything. They're going to keep you living a certain lifestyle, keep you happy. You won't own none of that stuff, though. You know what I'm saying? It's just to keep you happy. You get what I'm saying? So this is their plan. They've been talking about this for how long? Own nothing and be happy. You know, you live in a nice house, okay, but you don't own it. That all part of your universal basic income. You ain't going to do nothing to mess all that up. Your car, your house, everything. You don't own it, but you're happy. It's yours. It's yours.
But the way they got it set up, they got it set up like that now. The state that you in own a lot of your stuff.
Well, you got these corporations buying up all these single-family homes like BlackRock, Bill Gates, thousands of homes. You'll never own them, but you can live there. So what happens when they decide you can't live there no more? You don't own no land. You don't own the house you live in. They say you gotta go. You gotta go. They say you can't eat bread.
Okay.
They turn off your car. You can't eat no bread. They say you can't drink no water. You can't drink no water.
So you better comply.
They turn off your water. So I mean, can't you go to the river? They gonna block off all the rivers and everything that you, and the wells and all of that you can't get no water nowhere, huh?
Well, they don't want you to grow your food either.
No rain,
everything
water.
That makes you independent.
I know that's
everything
illegal.
That makes you independent. They're making laws against it. You can't collect water. You're not supposed to have barrels set up collecting water, the rainwater. But I wouldn't collect the rainwater anyway. It's really polluted. But that's not the point.
It's polluted, right?
If you wanted to collect it,
they probably spray it so heavy that they can't. They know they can't let people drink that shit, so they created a law. Because you know they been spraying so heavy. I know this
creates all kind of stuff, man.
Yeah.
Silver nitrates. That's what be making that sky turn white. Silver nitrates.
But I noticed that you know, they put all these restrictions and everything, but we always find a way. People in the hood, was just like in Detroit, when they said the last person leave Detroit, turn the lights out, because they flood Detroit. When they found out that people was living good here, and I mean, we always find a way, even in the hood. You might not be, you might be poor, but people be finding a way, some kind of way to make it.
No doubt. That's even back in the olden days. I was in the 50s. Uh-huh. We didn't have a lot of anything back in them days, but we was good, though. That's the difference between now and then. We didn't have a whole bunch of flashy material things, but we lived a good life. We ate good, clean food. We had people around us that had.
Well, this was right even thing. Back in the 70s when Coleman Young, when we had that riot, and when Coleman was the first black mayor, and they fled Detroit.
About,
and when they looked, yeah, when they came back,
they
it
bombed,
was so.
When they bombed the people.
Yeah, they came
was
back.
That
with operate,
was
good.
That move? Was that move that they bombed?
That wasn't
Who
here.
Was
that wasn't here. That was in Philadelphia.
No, she in Detroit.
Okay, she in Detroit. Okay. Oh, I thought you was move and shit because they did a number on them brothers. But that's not like the first time they did something like that either. And look, when you see them send all these people here, this has been planned for a long time to come invade our country. Infiltrate all our neighborhoods with people that look just like us, but they not us. And I don't get hung up on that African thing because I know ain't nobody from my family from Africa. I ain't never got a. I'm 68 years old. I ain't never had nobody send me nothing from Africa. I've been to Germany, but I've never been to Africa. And I know I'm not from Africa. My people and all them from Louisiana, Tennessee, Maine, North Carolina, South Carolina. I got people all over the South. And I know I'm not African. Look, I worked on the north side with Africans. I don't have nothing against Africans, but they treat you really different. Like they let you know that you're not a part of that. You know,
yeah,
you
that's right.
They make it quite clear, you know. They women be in there working. You know what they do when you walk into the store? I worked on the north side, down by Loyola University over that way. You walk into one of their shops, they woman out there in that counter, my man will come from behind that counter, he'll send her to the back so daggone fast, he don't even want her up there with you. Then they ask you questions.
I'll
like,
tell you
well,
this, bro. They was out here partying the other night, man. I guess it was some Muslim holiday or something. They was cooking
yeah.
out, man, and they was partying.
We in Ramadan, aren't we? That was the end of Ramadan, wasn't it?
Yeah, maybe, man. They was out here. They had their barbershop clothes on, and they was doing their thing, bro. We was looking like, yo, what's the you know, it's cold out here. Y'all barbecuing and stuff. You know what they done got had a revolution over there and got their independence. We was trying to figure out what was going on. You know what I'm saying? But yeah, they said it was some Muslims holiday, so they was out there. I guess they couldn't eat all this time, so they could finally eat something. So
right,
they
just came up their fast.
Yeah. It's in the Ramadan.
So yeah, they was really partying, bro. They had their music playing, and you know they was all out. I was like, damn, there's a lot of them out here. Damn,
y'all ain't go down there and check it out, man. You ain't go down and check it out.
Nah, yo, I don't eat their food. You know what I'm saying? Cause my daughter get her hair. You know they gotta get their hair braided, and I watch the ladies and they eat with their hands. I say y'all don't eat with forks. No, you use this hand to eat. This hand to wipe. I said that's it. I could never eat nothing y'all ever cooked.
They scoop it up the floor right in their jaw. Like they got a bear paw there.
What the fuck are y'all talking about, bro? Y'all wipe with one hand. Y'all got tissue? Like, nah, man. I know it's wrong, but you know
that ain't nothing, man.
I'm too American
I'm gonna
now.
Cutting meat with his toenail, man. This Indian dude, he's down there cooking food, man. He got a big, long, big toenail, man. He cutting the meat with
Wait
his up. Toenail and throwing it in the pan.
You
I'm like, oh, my God.
Wait, y'all what ever see heck? This white boy? He racist as hell. He on YouTube. He do, like, commentary on the videos with the Indians cooking. He's like, look at this piece of shit they're cooking.
Man,
you know, yo, his video, he got jokes.
Up, man.
Oh, man, yo, they had a train going through, right? A train riding down the street. So before the train came, they had it was like an open air little market, right? People was buying stuff, they was cooking food out there.
Get the hell out
Yo,
the way.
Train was coming, everybody they peeled that shit up and the train just went right through where the market. I said, oh, y'all was eating
yeah,
there? Like,
I
nah.
I saw
yeah,
that.
That's crazy. Yeah, that's crazy, bro.
Nobody was panicking either. They knew what time was coming.
No.
Hey, they grabbed their little stuff up, their little commissary up, and moved to the side of the tank.
I ain't never seen nothing like that, yo. Like, that's so sanitary. Like, nah. Yo, y'all eating that? Like,
hey, I wish I would have never seen it because, man, I don't eat no farm rest. I stopped eating that anyway, but I really don't go in no Indian places no more. Man.
Never. Nope. I don't eat Chinese food either, bro.
I don't eat that no more either. I used to. Me and my boy laughed about that. We went there so much, they knew us by name. Then we looked at each other one day and said, man, how many dogs and rats you think we ate? It ain't funny, though, man. It ain't funny.
Nah, they got the lady, yo. She on in Queens over there skewing the goddamn rats on the barbecue, bro. She got them, like, spinning them on the thing, bro.
She was happy as pie, man. She was happy roasting them rats.
I say, oh, my God, what are y'all doing? I don't know what she was, though. You couldn't really – she was either Asian or Spanish, one or the other, but she was short. And I say, yo, they're allowing this, man. Like, this
Hold
is
it.
Crazy.
They eat
y'all can't eat that?
Bro, they eat your dogs, too. They eat your dogs, too, bro. So a bunch of these foreigners that just came over here, they eat dogs. They will kill you. They will catch you. Well, they won't eat my dog. My dogs eat them, but they will eat your dog. I don't like nobody to eat dogs. I don't like that.
Yeah. Dr. Jeff, man, you got quiet, man. What's going on?
No, I'm the one laughing, man. I'm sorry.
Yeah, bro. Just they actually had a train ride through where they ate, yo.
The culture differences is just shocking, you know. Everything that they eat. I remember going over to Korea, and they don't waste nothing. The eyes, tongues, and all that stuff, man. I'm not eating all that going on. But, you know, I just had to step back and grab me some noodles and enjoy what I had going on and let them do their thing. But it's just a difference in culture, man.
We eat the eyes and toenails and all that too. Mm-hmm. They just grind it all up and put it in hot dogs and stuff.
Yeah, but we don't see it, man.
Right.
I don't know what that is.
Look, that's why I stopped eating McDonald's. When I heard that rabbi said, we've been telling you for years, we put the babies in the hamburgers. I'm like, the babies in the hamburgers? And he started laughing. Rabbi Finkelstein, I don't know if you've seen that interview.
Right, yeah.
He told him, we put the babies in the hamburger. I'm like, the babies in the hamburger? At McDonald's. We've been doing it for years. I'm like, what? That's the whole thing about people on these other levels. These people that's into the satanic stuff, they have to tell you what they're doing before they do it. And they tell you they don't care because they think you're not going to believe it anyway.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you know, when it comes to you in a movie rated PG-13, then, you know, you're kind of like, what the fuck is this, you know? Come to find out, that's the truth. That's the message you should be paying attention to, you know? Hindsight being 2020. You know? At least we know what to avoid as we start to, you know, take our endeavors and our personal matters into private and closed doors, you know, we know what to look out for. So I think we don't need we can put some things in place to to really protect ourselves, our families, you know, and our communities, you know.
Now, when you guys were young, was there always restrictions on movies, or was that something they came up with, you know, at – because I remember when they started the PG-13, you know what I'm saying? I remember that. But, I wanted to see Eddie Murphy Raw, but I couldn't, they wouldn't let me in. Like, he was like, nah, you can't get in here. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But, was it always that R and stuff on the movies, or was that something that they came up with?
I got put out a sweet, sweet, sweet back badass song. We snuck in. I think I was 13. The only reason I got caught, I was too small. Everybody was bigger than me. So when they came and shined their flashlight, they seen my little peanut head. You come with me. Oh, my God.
Right.
I didn't see no sweet, sweet, badass song. Mm.
Yeah, for me, it was
They always had
Rain.
PG, always.
Yeah, for me, it was Purple Rain. That's right about the time PG-13 came in because there was nudity in that movie. It was still rated R. We had to have an adult take us to see that one. So that was about 80, I don't even remember. But, you know, so I don't actually know exactly what year it did change, Thomas. But it seemed like that was something they put into place so they could get away with airing the stuff that they wasn't supposed to be airing. Because you used to have to up late at night to get some.
Black exploitation movies was all them pimp movies like Goldie, The Mac, Shaft, what else? Cotton Comes to Harlem.
68 is when they started doing that, on the, just before the exploitation movies came out.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, that coincides with the, what they call white flight and great mock. As black people moved to the urban areas, and you know, white people started moving out. We were in the areas where all the theaters and stuff was. So the movie industry was really about to go bankrupt until the black exploitation movies came out, because we went to see them, and they wasn't expecting that these little movies that they made for a few hundred thousand dollars is gonna make tens of millions of dollars for them. You know what I'm saying? And they didn't cost them nothing. And it saved them for a few years. That's all they could really wanted to do, was put the little bit of money out to make a lot of money off these black movies. And as soon as they got their money back up, they went just, you know, shitting on the black people again. But, yeah, those black movies was really important for them, because we were left where the theaters were, you know, in the cities and the urban areas.
Huh? I'm just saying, there's a bunch of good movies back in the day. As far as I'm concerned, they call them. I never understood why they call them black exploitation, because as far as I was concerned, the movies was quality to me. Especially after looking at A.B. and Opie and all them all day long on regular TV, the Brady Bunch and all that nonsense. Going to the movie to see somebody doing something, like, especially Curtis Mayfield, he made a lot of good soundtracks. Then you had what's his, the bald head dude, Isaac Hayes. It's a bunch of bad dudes back in them days.
Yes, sir.
Well, we down to our last minute.
Bev, I got in tonight 20 minutes right before you started, because we're having a big transition at work where we're switching offices. So a lot of people are moving at first. So next Friday I have a big move. I'm probably not going to get in the house until after 10 o'clock. So I don't think, I already know they were doing it on Friday.
Okay.
Yeah, I looked at the list and I saw, like, I got to move 100-some computers. I said, oh, goodness, man, it's going to be all night. But I get my overtime.
All right, well, talk again live week after next.
Thanks,
everybody.
Yep, thanks,
everybody. Okay. Better love,
everyone.
Peace. Off from the Indians, welcome to pilgrims. And to the buffaloes who once ruled the plains, like the vultures circling beneath the dark clouds, looking for the rain, looking for the rain, just like the cities that stagger on the coastline. And a nation that just can't stand much more, like the far as buried beneath the highway, never had a chance to grow. Never had a chance to grow. And now it's a winter. Winter in America. Yes, and all of the hills have been killed, sent away. Yeah, but the people know it's winter. Winter in America. Nobody knows what to say. Save your soul. Lord knows from winter in America. The Constitution, a noble piece of paper, with free society, a struggle, but they died in vain. And now democracy is a ragtime on the corner, hoping for some rain. It looks like he's hoping, hoping for some rain. And I see the robins perched in barren treetops. They're watching last-ditch races marching across the floor. But just like the peace signs that vanished in our dreams, never had a chance to grow. Never had a chance to grow. And now it's winter. Winter in America. Know it's winter. Lord knows it's winter in America. And ain't nobody fighting, 'cause nobody knows what to say. Save your soul from winter in America. Nobody knows, nobody knows.